we have a Google sheet called Relationship Goals that breaks
down. Hashtag
Relationship Goals, which breaks down essentially every aspect of our relationship, financial, personal, the family / kid dynamic, spiritual. And we try to, as much as possible, like what we do in our day-to-day jobs, quantify these things. We have a silly goal of trying to not yell at them more than 3 times a week. You know,
very lucky. 3 bombs, yeah.
There are times when Whitney is in the driver's seat and we are going 100 miles an hour down this highway. And like, you better buckle up and this is how it's going to go. And there's maybe times where like I get into that driver's seat and I'm taking over. We're still going to go fast, but we're just not going to go as fast. We're not going to brake. We're just going to glide.
It's just so obvious that if I'm going to get a CFO, I would pay a recruiting firm. Whereas for the biggest decision.
Because you're not trying to sleep with your CFO, Eric.
don't do that, Eric. Don't do that.
Today on Modern Relationships, I sit down with Whitney Narcisse, formerly an operating partner at First Round Capital, who is now launching a matchmaking company, and Carl Narcisse, a partner on the talent team at A16Z. They met at a baseball game 10 years ago, and similar to Elizabeth and Kevin from last week's episode, are balancing intense careers in tech with raising 3 kids. Up ahead, they discuss finding the right partner, navigating cultural differences, and how they apply people ops principles to their marriage.
Whitney, Carl, thanks so much for coming on Modern Relationships.
Thanks for having us.
So Whitney, you're a matchmaker, and Carl, you're in the talent business. So you both in different ways think about fits and matches. We're going to talk about that a lot on today's episode, but maybe you could first talk about your story and how you guys got together, and we could talk about what lessons anyone can draw for how to find a great partner.
You want to go first?
Sure. I guess, you know, we have similar yet conflicting stories on how we met. But essentially, I'm from Boston. Whitney's a San Francisco native. We actually were brought together through a mutual friend of ours who is actually a friend of mine from Boston who lives out here, went to college with Whit. And we met at a Red Sox Giants game. So hence like the two geographies coming together at AT&T Park. And yeah, we were able to come together and we kind of hit it off right away, just like through, you know, a brief introduction. I think we just kind of were feeling each other's energy, especially going into a really cool sporting event, which we would come to find out is something that we really gravitate towards, is like experiences, and kind of was love at first pitch, if you will.
I just texted my friend in preparation for this podcast and asked him, the guy who set us up, was it your intention to invite us both to this baseball game or was it just random? Because he had showed each of us a picture of ourselves, of each other. And he said it was absolutely a setup of 100,000% dead ass, swear to God. So like, apparently to him, he put the dots together. But I think what's really important in this story is it didn't feel like it was a setup. It didn't feel like there was pressure, like I'm going to go meet this guy at this pregame before this baseball game. And really, it was more of, let me just do the things I like. Let me just have some fun. And I might meet someone in the meantime. And I didn't even recognize him from the picture that my friend showed us.
I recognized her, the picture that I was given. So I was happy. And so, yes. But yeah, I mean, there was no pressure going into the situation. I think our friend did a really good job of just keeping it casual. We know him very well, so we knew he had good intentions regardless of who we're going to connect with, and we just kind of let it flow from there.
Yeah. And so where were you in your dating journey? Like, were you pretty experienced by this point? Were you kind of early? Like, where were you at the time?
Okay. I had done a ton of dating and I was with someone for over 5 years. We lived together and ultimately that wasn't the right fit. And then I had probably spent about 18 months dating around and trying to figure out who my person was and putting a little bit of pressure on, ooh, time is ticking, and putting a little pressure on how I need to find the person. And really, honestly, this specific night, I almost didn't go. I was working in the South Bay and I drove up to the city for this game. It was all about watching baseball and not about finding my person. And that's why I feel like I was just so much more open to what really happened. And you were also in a relationship before.
Yeah. So I was coming out of a long-term relationship at the time, a few months removed. So I wasn't really in a mental capacity to think about another relationship, just given what had just happened. So I was kind of coming in pretty open. Just we're going to a baseball game. There are going to be some folks there. There's some folks that go to Whitney's alma mater, which is like back home for me. So there was like a natural connection. I was just looking to meet great people, you know, at a night out, you know, at the ballpark there. So I think that really kind of helped us, was like us going into it knowing that like we are going to be open just to the experience. We're not going in there with a preconceived notion of what we're looking for. We're going in to connect with people. It's really about connection and just like having a very good experience with it. And out of it, you know, came a wonderful relationship.
And did you have say more about kind of maybe we'll start with Whitney, like what you were looking for, or when you had a sense of like, hey, this is the thing. Like, how did you sort of evaluate it early on?
I was about to go to business school, and I just thought I really need someone who's really intellectual, that we can talk about all these different topics all the time. And I was really focused on a business-oriented person and someone who we could just stay up all night talking about philosophy and all of that. And we do a lot of that, but it's more fun and it's more organic and it's more me. And I think what happened when I met him is that I could be my full authentic self, which was not this person trying to, you know, climb hard at this career ladder and trying to find a partner who can meet me tit for tat on all these specific career things. It ended up being that he is that guy, but that's when I met him, it was not under that context. And so being able to see this really fun side, who could go out, who could watch sports, was something that a lot of, I think, San Francisco guys were lacking at the time. And so it really just allowed me to expand and then get to know him on a different level versus just going after something that wasn't the right fit at all.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about kind of what are the needs that you need to get met via your partner versus what are the needs that you can get met by friends or just in other ways. How did you guys think about that?
I mean, I think for me, I was, again, just like really open to the idea of meeting someone who I can connect with on various levels. So the baseball game is a great way to kind of set the table, but it was not like the entire playbook as far as like how we like run our relationship. I think it just gave us like a good backdrop, you know. And I think for me, it's being able to have, again, organic conversations with someone where I can kind of take any kind of twist and turn. It could be sports, it could be philosophy, politics, social issues, current events, tech, as we all know here. And I think that's kind of like what I want, but that's also what kind of transpired during our first meeting, was that like even in the bleachers of AT&T Park, we're talking about all different types of topics. We're talking about each other's families, you know, went to Boston College. So like talking about her college upbringing, you know, on the East Coast, you know, hanging out with our friends. It's like almost as if like all the little pieces that I was finding was found in that little microcosm of those 9 innings, you know, at a baseball game. And so I think that for me, that was kind of like the validation. I didn't know at the time that she was the one. I had a really strong feeling about this woman. And I think that kind of gave me the foundation to say, okay, like, let's take this next step, not expecting this next step at this point, especially coming out of a long-term relationship. But like, there's a lot of things here that I found in this 2-3 hour setting that like makes me want to go further.
It was probably like 5 or 6 hours.
It was a long game. Yes. It was a very long game.
I knew. I texted my girlfriends that night and I said, I'm in love, ha ha, with like a happy, smiley, funny emoji. It was sort of a joke, but I kind of just knew. And I think there are some relationships where when you know, you know, and there are some relationships that take time to build. And so people always ask me, to give them advice on whether it needs to be when you know, or when you need to actually build it. And I think it just depends. It depends on what life stage you're at. It depends on how many people you've gone through and seen. And at that moment, though, I just knew. And I think one of the things that I actually encourage a lot of early daters to do, early meaning a few weeks, a few months into a relationship, is to go on a trip together. Someone just texted me about that today, and she was like, "We're going to Hawaii this week." And they've only known each other for a month. And I was like, "This is cool." So we did a road trip to LA 3 weeks after we met. And you can imagine just 7 hours with anyone in any car. I had never survived a 7-hour car ride before without getting into fights with friends. So the fact that we survived that both ways, 14 hours.
Yeah, round trip. LA traffic too.
I have had a friend where we couldn't ride home before. Like, I had to kick him out of the car. But with this guy, we just totally got along, and it was so fun and effortless. And we could really talk about all of the different topics. And I just didn't want to get out of the car. I couldn't get enough of him. And that's when I kind of knew, like, yeah, for sure.
Wow. Okay. So there were so many green flags. As you were getting to know each other, what were some reservations you might have had, or questions or wonders? And how did you sort of work through them?
I'll go.
Oh, I'll let you go first. Ladies first.
Okay. I have something very tactical. I have bigger things, but I'll start off with one thing that really pissed me off is that he told me to shut up a lot. Like, he actually used the word shut up when we were just talking. And I know it can be a joke.
In a joking manner.
Yeah. Like, shut up.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Not malicious.
Like, but there are parts of me that are super feminist that are like, don't tell me to shut up. Like, I'm a grown woman. Don't use that language. And actually, over time, I said it probably in a nicer way.
Maybe, sure.
Yeah, let's go with that.
And I just feel like over time, the words shut up just kind of left his vocabulary. And that just felt meaningful and important to me. So that was one. A much bigger thing that I would actually say was a challenge early on is just being from different cultures. And my family, I was born and raised in San Francisco. My family is in San Francisco within a 15-mile, 20-mile radius. I probably have 50 family members who are all up in your face. But with that, and with the Chinese American culture, comes a lot of Chinese New Year events and sweeping the graveyard and all these things. So there's this thing that you do, the sweeping of the graves, which is very weird in other cultures. But in Chinese culture, you basically go to a cemetery and have a picnic and you play games, or you bring dim sum and you burn stuff. Like, you actually burn these fake Mercedes papers and let them fly into the ether for your ancestors. And because I've done that for every year since I was born, it didn't feel weird to me. And because family is so important to me, it was really important that Carl came to those cemetery trips. And he really kind of protested early on, and rightfully so. Now that I look back on it, it is super weird. I get it. and so he just wouldn't come. And I'm like, why wouldn't you come? Like, these people are dead under the ground. They're not going to come spooking and get you. You know, you're going to be okay.
That was a concern of mine.
Or maybe it was like a health hazard because there's food at the graveyard. I'm not sure. But either way, it just felt really like he wouldn't connect with me on that really important familial level. And so we had to work through a lot of those things. And he's Haitian American. So he talked about Haitian culture and Chinese culture. And don't forget, we're in America and in the Bay Area. So there's all these different cross-cultural issues, the graveyard situation being one of them. But this came out very often early on in our relationship.
I think for me, similarly, is the idea of just like the family component. Because as Whit mentioned, she has a very big family here in San Francisco proper and, you know, Bay Area. I have a very big family, but it's spread out across the U.S., all over Boston, all the way down to Miami, Florida, to Chicago. Like, I have family in Texas. So just having a high concentration of family in one area was very, very cool, actually, to see that level of community. But I think it just made it, for me, just a little bit overwhelming in the beginning, just because like every time we go to meet with the family, it's like a family reunion. Whereas my family can never get their act together because we're spread out, you know, across all these different cities. So it was very enlightening in the sense of like, okay, here we are. This is her family, her upbringing, pretty much right in front of me. It feels a little bit overwhelming. And I think for me over time, it was just like getting used to that. I don't think it was any, and what was great about it is that her family was so welcoming to me from day one, minute one. There was no weird feelings, even despite some of the cross-cultural issues we may have, faced in the beginning. All in all, her family was super welcoming. And I think that allowed me to kind of lean in further, knowing like, okay, I really like this woman. I'm just getting to know her. Seems like she comes from a great background, great people around her. And I think that also helped me, like, over time, tell her about my family and introduce her to my side of it, especially coming from like a Caribbean, American, East Coast kind of upbringing on my end.
He actually met my parents like 6 weeks into dating, which sounds crazy, but it was so good. I needed a couch moved. And actually, my parents needed a couch moved. And so I needed muscles.
So I'm here for the help, the muscle.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get right back to the conversation after a word from our sponsors. Modern Relationships is sponsored by Relationship Hero, your personal relationship coach. It's an open secret in Silicon Valley that people are using these relationship coaches. Over 100,000 users are happy they tried Relationship Hero. You might be wondering, what is it like to talk to a relationship coach? Well, here's Jackie Pugh, a senior coach at Relationship Hero.
That's a really good question. Okay, I actually just got off a call with a client who was getting mixed signals from his ex. So she's the one that broke up with him, but then she kept sending him these really heartfelt, long, emotional messages at midnight, and then in the morning would act like nothing ever happened.
We've all been there. How do you recommend handling something like that?
So what we would do is we would want to hear exactly what's going on so we can help discern, is my client's ex, is she just trying to process her emotions and she's doing it via text message? Is she potentially trying to keep my client on the back burner? Or is she actually trying to reconnect? And if she is, then I help my client decide, you know, is this something that he actually wants to do, reconnect? And if so, why?
Thanks, Jackie. If you want to try your first one-on-one or couples coaching session, go to relationshiphero.com/modern. You'll get $50 off your first session if you use our link. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/modern.
And so how do you guys handle sort of like differences in temperament or you guys have been together 10 years, you've obviously sort of adjusted in different ways or sort of reflected on what compromises you're willing to make or not willing to make. What are one or two that come to mind?
The biggest one for me is that I am a morning person, bright eye, bushy tail. I'm ready to rock and roll in the morning. And this guy is a log, just cannot get up. We have no offense.
It's like,
we have 3 children. We have a 3, 5, and 7-year-old. Life is crazy. Life is busy. And they do not care that it was daylight savings time yesterday, right? They do not care that time changes. They do not care that we went out drinking last night and it affected us, right? One of the things, and that really, it was tough in the beginning when we were dating, because I'm like, let's go on a hike. You know, it's the Bay Area, it's Saturday morning hike. And he just wanted to just chill and go out at 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. And so I had to learn to adjust. And for me, it was a big thing, but it's not that big. I think when you're building a marriage, when you're building a true partnership, you learn to figure it out and you learn how to live with it. And so what that means for me is that, yeah, I get up and I probably have the kids a little bit more in the morning than he does. But I know that if late at night, when I'm in bed by 10 p.m. and someone wakes up, he's the one that's going to get up and get them because he's not in bed yet. So there's compromise, there's willingness to just figure it out. It's okay that we're not on the exact same schedule. We have a lot of great quality time together and it doesn't have to be 24/7.
I do get up to pick up the kids, just to let the record show that. You know, I am a night owl by nature, but I get up when need to. I think for me, it was, you know, I love Wit. One of the things that I love about Wit is her effervescent, bubbly personality. She is such high energy all the time. And for people who don't know her, you know, when you meet her at first, like, you're like, whoa, this is a lot of energy. Like, okay, what's going on here? I kind of felt that way when I first met her. But it was something that I gravitated towards, but it also was tough just given, okay, she's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed to start the morning. And like anything that we do in the afternoon and anything that's early evening, it's just like, go, go, go. And I think for me, I kind of, like, if she was a speed limit on the highway, she's going 100 miles an hour. I prefer to go a nice 72, 73 miles an hour, you know, cautiously fast, but cautious nonetheless. And so just kind of understand like her energy, her temperament around that. I think for me, just understanding like she's different from me in that regard. I think we kind of balance each other out. Like she allows me to kind of bring my best self and bring like the best energy that I can to our kids, to our relationship, to going out, whatever the case may be. And I think it just really helps me understand, okay, like there are times when like Whitney is in the driver's seat and we are going 100 miles an hour down this highway. And like, you better buckle up and this is how it's going to go. And there's maybe times where like I get into that driver's seat and I'm taking over. We're still going to go fast, but we're just not going to go as fast. We're not going to brake. We're just going to glide, if you will, you know, on the interstate.
Yeah, like he would prefer probably like one or two things a day per weekend day. And I would prefer five or six things. And so I have learned to chill, and it's really rejuvenating, and it is helpful to only have one or two things some weekends. So thank you.
I agree. I think we just, yeah, you're welcome. I think we just balance each other out, like on who's in the driver's seat. She is predominantly in the driver's seat, and I got my seatbelt and my helmet on, ready to go.
You said Whitney's type A, and I call your type A minus?
I'm type A minus, exactly. That's probably the best way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, I will say though, even though I am often in the driver's seat because I'm super type A, I want a man, and I was looking for a man to lead. That's another thing that I find a lot with my female clients is that everyone wants a man. Like most people want like a man to lead, whether or not they want to admit it. Like if you're in a heterosexual relationship and you're looking for love and you're in your 30s, a lot of people are like, they're sick of leading. It's tiring. It's tiring for me to make all the plans. It's tiring for me to say everything that I want and be the most communicative one. Like, I wanted a man who leads, and that is exactly what Carl does a lot of the time. Maybe not in like the planning stuff, but in terms of like, how do we think about the philosophy of our family? How do we think about what we want our values to be? I love that he can lead in that way. And so I want to like encourage more men to step into that leader role, not the a-hole role, right? But like the leader role, which I think is what a lot of women are looking for.
Yeah, and I think 100% true. And then also, perhaps also some women would benefit from also, if they're the ones usually sort of being type A and everything, learning to sort of either, I don't know, let go or defer or sort of let someone lead as well.
Exactly. Like let go or be in your feminine. Like coaching someone last week, we were talking about how she's like, he's not a planner, so I have to do it. And if I'm not doing it, then I have to tell him. And it is really exhausting. But I think if you can just state your case, say what it is, and then step back, you'll know if he's the right one, right? You say like, I feel like I've been planning a few different things, and I would love you to take the leadership role. I know you think I'm probably gonna, you know, be type A about it, but like, I would love for you to plan. And then, by the way, if he plans Sonoma instead of Napa, don't get mad. Like, be glad that it's even Sonoma. You know, I think there's a lot of people, men and women, who are so nitpicky these days, and it's really nice when people do nice things for you. Just sit back and appreciate it.
Whitney, I want to hear more about your evolution. You know, you're sharing offline how you sort of started out more avoidant, but then became more anxious at one point. When you talk about what that was like for you.
Yeah, so we both come from divorced parents, and it's been both very formative for how we act and how we've loved each other, but it's also been amazing. I would say my parents are the key to my success. One, because they've learned how to co-parent me really well, and then they've also just been the best grandparents to our kids, and they're the reasons why we can actually have a life and enjoy our life. And so anywho, because my parents divorced at a very early age, pre-elementary school, I feel like I was always avoidant growing up. And so I never really wanted to get close to anyone. And I said at one point to either my brother or best friend, like, I don't believe that I could actually be in a relationship or a marriage that would ever work because my parents didn't work and I could see some issues that happened. And I think that that could happen to me. And so I was so avoidant. I remember I had like this silly little high school boyfriend and he was like trying to come up and dance with me at one of the school dances. And I would just run away and be like, oh, too much. You're trying to get too close. And he was my boyfriend. I should have loved it. But all the time I kept finding myself running away or to be honest, like, you know, using alcohol and drinking and then being like, okay, then I can get close. And then once I was, you know, not drinking, I was like, oh, go away. And so I learned a lot of lessons in my, you know, late teens, early 20s about just like how avoidant I was. Eventually, I think once I found the right person, that was Carl, I got a little anxious with him. And actually, when we met, same thing happened. I had a birthday party with a party bus at the clubs. And then we had known each other for maybe, I don't know, a couple of months. And he came to my birthday party and he was trying to dance with me at Temple at the club. And I was like, no, like, don't dance with me. You're too close. And anyway, he just like kept coming back and being that steady, not like overly leaning toward me, but he was just like a steady force. And having that steady, securely attached man allowed me to feel secure. Anyway, fast forward to when we were dating, I think I got really anxious. I don't know if it was the time clock or it was something else. I just kept being like, oh, when are we gonna do things? Like, I need more of you, and just clawing. And I don't think it was very helpful, but because he was so secure, it really allowed us to just continue to pursue and push forward. And that's why I think, like, without a secure person, I don't know if I would ever like find this amazing marriage almost a decade long that has like served so many amazing purposes. And now I feel truly secure. And he's again, still the rock, the super secure guy where I'm out here meeting singles and he's cool. And like, I'm not interested in any of these singles, but he's cool with it. And you can't find that in a lot of guys. It's really amazing.
I want to talk about something that we also talked about offline, which is sort of the, let's, you know, you phrased it as sort of like the people ops you know, superpower into marriage. And you guys are both, you know, longtime tech operators and have sort of like a few other couples on the show kind of adopted some best practices, so to speak, to your marriage. What do you think are some things that you do that other couples can learn from?
Chime in here. I think we do a really good job of taking love seriously. And that's not to mean like, oh, it's like, you have to, it's not like it's your job and you're doing like a work project. You have to take this seriously. It's just like being very intentional, being very almost organized with like how you think about your day-to-day relationship with someone. So for example, you know, we do a really good job of being able to write down our goals as a couple. Like, what are our relationship goals? We have a Google sheet called relationship goals. It breaks
down
hashtag relationship goals, which breaks down essentially every, you know, aspect of our relationship, financial, personal, the family / kid dynamic, spiritual. And we try to, as much as possible, like what we do in our day-to-day jobs, quantify these things so we can make sense of these goals that we set forth. And so I think that, and we review them on like a quarterly basis. And that gives us like just a good kind of reference guide, a compass of like how to think about where we're trying to go, how are we doing against that, and like what can we do to be more intentional and more actionable around our relationship. And I think that's really kind of kept us, like, that structure, it really gives us the guardrails necessary to continue to thrive, you know, 10 years in.
Yeah, it's a little extra, but because I'm an extra person, I go in there every month and we color code each of the goals. And by we, I mean, I go in and color it red, yellow, or green. How are we doing on this specific goal this month? And then I'll send it to him and be like, oh, look at us this month. This is good. We've been doing it since 2018. So the other thing I love is just, it's essentially this like artifact of all of the goals that we've had in the past and how we've achieved it and how we've done. And at the end of the quarter, like he said, we come together and we're like, wow, what did we like about this? How do we feel about this? And then we start planning for the next quarter, which is great. We also do annual planning, which sounds so silly, but on December 31st this year, we had a 6-hour offsite and went through all of the different things, our financial strategy for 2025 and what we're going to do with kids, what we're going to do with our relationship. And it's really just grounding. We also have, it's just all about rhythms. Rhythms, I think, are key to making sure that nothing slips, that one of us doesn't hold anger for too long or jealousy or any of these vices that could really damage a relationship. We try to catch them in these regular catch-ups. So one would be, we have a weekly family meeting on Sundays, and that's when our entire team, as I call it, for anyone who's helping with the kids for the week, has access to a Notion doc. We have a weekly Notion template that spits out the kids' normal schedules, and then anything that's abnormal for the week is highlighted in red, and we check in with our team to make sure that it all works. And then we have biweekly date days or date nights, and it's usually a Friday night or it could be a lunch if schedules aren't too crazy. And that's where we try not to talk about schedules and we just talk about other things that are really fun. But you can imagine having three kids, so many people just lose their way. They lose their marriage, they lose their relationship. Like, one is incredibly hard, two is pretty hard, and three is freaking hard, double black diamond. So we're not having any more kids, Eric.
And you have full-time jobs and you're founding a company.
Yes, being an entrepreneur, having a super busy job, having weeknight events all the time. Now me having weekend events, like, it is wild. And we could not do this without our team, our au pair, our parents, and without being extremely judicious about what we choose to do and not to do, and then also being organized.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's amazing that you both have paid help and parental help. That's pretty special.
Yeah, it takes a village. It certainly does.
I think like one of the things that I think I'm noticing a lot in my friend groups is that a lot of people are trying to do this live together concept, that this, like, let's bring everyone together and build some kind of community and a commune or whatever the case may be. And I just feel like a lot of Asian culture has set us up that way, where it's not out of the ordinary for a grandmother to live with you and then a cousin to live down the street. Like, again, my cousins are all super close and I feel like we have kids similar ages, so we can kind of help each other out. And it's so nice to have this like real true family aspect. It almost feels like we actually do have a village of family, friends, and then of course paid help as well.
Can you say more about the relationship goals? Like, what are some example goals, or how do you think about goals that other people could learn from, or, you know, might work?
I want to pull them up.
I guess while she's pulling up, I think a few that come to mind, for example, is like for the kids, like being able to fund like their 529, accounts, you know, for their future college, hopefully going to college endeavors. It could be around experiences at work, like, maybe it's around like being able to take two professional events a week, so that you could do proper networking, whatever the situation calls for there. It could revolve around finances when it comes to our own savings. Like, we want to be able to save X amount of money within this quarter to meet this financial goal, so that we can get to the end annual goal of X. It could be not to yell as much as our kids, try to be as zen as possible, and maybe use other methods to be able to get through them, to discipline them, to be able to parent them. We have a silly goal of trying to not yell at them more than 3 times a week. Very
lucky. Three bombs, yeah.
Is that one tough to hit?
On our sheet, but you get the idea. just other examples that come to mind?
Yeah, it's mostly financial goals and then experiences goals, things around work, children's development, and then our spiritual journey. We're both Christian. That's another thing that I think is really core to our marriage that a lot of people in San Francisco aren't really into. So I don't know if that's relatable, but I do feel like there's a revival in the Bay Area happening. And whether it's Christianity or some kind of spiritual alignment, I feel like that is one of the core tenets to marriage.
And you also alluded offline to you doing some sort of groups, either through your church or getting some either cohort or accountability. Talk about what that's like for other people who are curious to learn more about whether they should do it.
So we go to Epic Church in San Francisco, and it started off with like 13 people at the W Hotel in 2013 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we've been going since 2015, basically since we got serious. Yeah, since we got serious with each other. And so they, on a quarterly basis, have small groups. And you could think about it like any kind of cohort where you meet on a weekly basis and you talk about a specific topic. And for us, we went to these marriage groups where there are people who have only been married maybe 3 or 6 months like us. And then there are people who are married for a decade or longer who are leading the group. And it's really about just core life lessons that you want to bring into the marriage. And we always read a book or do some kind of study that helps to sort of get everyone on the same page. So one of the first ones that we did was this thing called Love and Respect. And I've just learned so much from these courses. The basic premise, it's a little weird because it's like women should be wearing pink and men should have blue headphones or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's bad in the gender stereotypes. But the truth is, the point was that men desire respect and women desire love. And that's it. And if you, as a woman in a heterosexual relationship, if you can provide respect to a man, that he feels respected, that you're not trying to cut him and do all these bad things or be shady, and you're just respecting him and honoring him, that will lead to love for a guy. Whereas, like, you could respect me, but that's not my thing. Like, I just want to be loved. As a woman, I care deeply about being loved. Show me that you love me. Obviously, the 5 different love languages, which is another Christian book, by the way. Like, people talk about love languages all day and don't realize it's a Christian author. And so I care deeply about quality time. And so when he's spending quality time with me, I feel loved. And that is what I need. And so anyway, you learn all these different things in these small groups. And it's essentially like marriage counseling. But it's free. I mean, I guess you pay through tithing.
Yeah.
But it's free. And it's with people who are kind of aligned on a similar journey, which is really fabulous.
And if I could add to that, you know, I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, just being like, we met at a Giants game. The Giants game was just a backdrop. Just like in this example, like the church in a small group was just a backdrop for us to have like these organic conversations with people that are like-minded, that have similar values to us. And like, we can grow off of that. So, and like, first off, being able to kind of put yourself out there in that regard, just like how we put ourselves out there, you know, night one. And I think that's, you know, another kind of underlying theme to kind of be cognizant of is like, first, put yourself out there. I know it's very daunting. It's a very bold thing to do, but you never know what's going to come back. You never know what kind of conversations or relationships will evolve from that. And I think you'll walk away feeling like, wow, that was really tough, but I feel like more fulfilled. I have a sense of like belonging and with people that are similar to me, that are like me and kind of going in the same pattern as we are. So I think those small groups have really helped us to be able to find these little pockets of folks to be able to strengthen not only our faith, but our relationship together.
There's single small groups too.
Single small groups.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I want to return back to how we started this conversation, or what we alluded to in terms of your matchmaking, Whitney. How has your experience sort of informed kind of your philosophy on how you're thinking about your product and kind of what it is that you do is in terms of like, do you listen to people about what they're looking for and then help them find it? Do you help coach them on sort of, you know, to have better criteria? You know, do you think that opposites attract, or like, how do you think about your what you do?
Yeah, awesome. I'll start off with what I do, and then I'll kind of explain some of the why, I guess. So I'm calling myself a dating concierge because I started off with thinking I could just match people. And what I realized is that matching is only a little bit of it. And really coaching paired with matching is really the sweet spot. And so I only provide one match a month. I'm not doing high volume matching with anyone. It's really focused on quality and making sure that they match most of the things that the person wants. The second piece is coaching, which is oftentimes people have these set of beliefs and they oftentimes, because they've stated them so many times, they believe them to be true. And what I found is that there really is a difference between stated and revealed preferences, where people might state all day what they want, and then they look back on who they're actually dating and they're like, oh, I guess I actually do like younger women. And it's like, okay, so we know that. So there's kind of this matchmaking plus the coaching aspect. And then where the concierge comes in is that I'm available all the time within an hour. Like basically my SLA is that I'll respond to any text within an hour about what's going on. So when they finish a date, we obviously do a debrief and try to talk through the good things first. What are the positives? Let's always start with the positives. What did you learn about yourself? And then you could tell me why you're not interested in dating her again, right? So kind of having these frameworks around like what happens post-date. And in addition to that, there's basically all these other things that people could lean into if they want to. I do, again, bringing people ops into relationships, I do a 360 review for clients. And so I've talked to obviously friends and family members. I've also talked to therapists and exes of my clients, which I found super interesting. But I basically can get all this information that someone might not state themselves, that their therapist might tell me or that their friends might tell me. And it's been really helpful to have that. There's also styling for some people who just need a few new pieces. And so I have a friend stylist who comes in and it's like, okay, let's choose a new set of pants or a new set of jeans instead of those that you've had for the past 10 years. And with a lot of guys, I think just the styling piece could be cool. And I'm not trying to make everyone the next, you know, Bruno Cucinelli model or whatever. I'm really just looking for people to just like look clean and presentable, which is sometimes hard in the Bay. We're very casual in the Bay. I'm casual in the Bay. I roll in sweats a lot, but styling and then photography. I really feel like people think they have good pictures and sometimes they don't. So that's key to it. I have some other kinds of ancillary things like a psychic or an energy reader who, you know, who does that. And then of course, the last piece to this is events. And what Carl is kind of saying about small groups with people just needing to be open in like-minded areas, I put together a game night for people who love games. I'm putting together a house party for people who are more extroverted. I'm putting together a Christian event for people who are interested in like faith or raising kids who have some kind of faith. I'm putting together a bougie dinner for people who like bougie things. So you really have to kind of like find the things that you love to do and then find events where hopefully there are enough singles and you know, you're not like the only single person in a group of friends who are all dating. Anyway, I talked a lot, but that's kind of what I do. Separately, I'll move over to how I feel like what I've been doing and kind of some of my philosophy. One is that I do believe that apps are okay as kind of a Kickstarter for me to understand what kinds of women you're interested in and what kinds of conversations you're having. But I really don't think the apps are good at the end of the day. I think it provides this illusion of infinite choice. I think that people just can just move on to the next one and not work out any problems. And so what I'm actually trying to do, which sounds counterintuitive and clients don't like this, is put constraints on what is available. And so when people pay me, that's actually a good way to say, okay, I care enough about getting through this problem that I am going to put money toward it. And then I'm going to listen to you. So I do think it's helpful that people pay a pretty penny to work with me. And so my constraints are you only get 3 non-negotiables that I'm going to fully consider for a date, and then I'm going to put you on a date. And of course, there are 72 other things that I often get. And I'm like, okay, I probably can make most of these happen, but let me push your assumptions on why this matters. Like, you say that you really want kids and you want to go to Bali monthly. Tell me why Bali matters so much to you, right? So it's about pushing assumptions and kind of being very direct just about why do you care so deeply about this? And then they'll say something, and it's probably rational because people are extremely rational in the Bay. And then we kind of work through it and just say, you know, well, that doesn't matter as much. My favorite part about this is when I either put together an event and people who I never thought would get together actually get together and are dating, or someone I pushed to go on a first or even second follow-up date with someone, and they were like, I really don't want to do this. He is X, Y, or Z. And I pushed them. And then the next morning I get a text like, that was amazing. Thank you for pushing me. He wasn't as handsy the second time, or he wasn't as direct, or his breath didn't smell as much. That all of scents are real. Scents are so real. Yeah. And so I love just the transformation of people. And I'm trying to keep a log with all my clients of what they're saying and then how things change, because we work together for at least a quarter. It's been amazing.
Wow. A lot of great stuff there. First, on the 360, what a fascinating idea. What do you find people typically learn, or what surprised you about doing this with clients?
One of the questions that I ask in the 360, my favorite question is, let's say I'm talking to a best friend of someone. I ask them, what is something that you haven't told my client that you should about their relationship issues, or about why they're still single, or about why they haven't found their person? And that question alone opens up so much. And oftentimes they'll start off with, I think I've told him everything that I'm super direct and honest. I think I've told him everything. And I'm like, okay, let's just sit with it. And then something really revealing or something interesting comes up. People cannot see themselves everything that their closest community can see. And so it's just been, honestly, it's the best way to get started. And I can look at Hinge or Bumble or Raya profiles. I can go through past dates and faces and text messages, but I just love the 360. It is so good because I'm never going to get to know the person as much as their own community knows them.
What do you think, this question for both of you, what do you think the mistakes people make around picking a person in terms of what to look for, or how they kind of go about the early process?
Share some thoughts. I think something that I've noticed, like probably from myself, my own personal experience, as well as like, you know, my friend group, is just like the need to have like the 10 out of 10. And I know, like, you know, we're here, we're in the Bay, lots of tech companies. I'm gonna make it about work really quickly. You know, and I work in the talent world, like a lot of the people that the companies and leaders that I help support, they're always looking for like the 10 out of 10. And I completely understand that. But it's hard to find like, you know, these unicorns and these purple squirrels everywhere. You know, they're not everywhere. And I think there's just an understanding of this is not like lowering the bar, but just understanding like you need to meet someone where they are. And they may not be a 10 out of 10. They may not have a 10 out of 10, but they have some really strong core qualities that you are missing in your life that you need, or maybe that you're looking to supplement, reinforce what you already have. And you have to like really have a shared understanding around that potential partner and know that like you can still live a very fulfilled life, a very successful life, however way you define success when it comes to your relationship, as long as you have like those core values, those core tenets really there to kind of hold you down. And I think people just kind of get stuck in this. You mentioned like about the apps, about how people want to, you know, they want to just, they didn't have infinite choice. They just keep finding that purple squirrel until they find it. But like not really realizing there's great people right in front of you that you're just swiping left on. And you have to kind of like open your eyes and like really look around you, proverbially speaking, to understand like you have certain qualities, they have certain qualities, there's some overlap there, you know, that you can build a really strong foundation with. And then from there, everything that's kind of tertiary, you can work with that and you can experience that together. You can have communication around that. As long as you have the core, that's what's really going to hold you down, you know, through thick and thin.
But similarly, I guess, in the work context, everyone always talks about 10X engineers. You always want a 10X engineer for your startup, X, Y, and Z. At some point, the 10X engineer, because you've either grown so much, is no longer the 10X engineer, or the 10X engineer wants to jump off the ship, right? And go to the next hot startup. And so I think it's really important to remember that relationships are not just what I need and I want. It is a partnership, and you have to find someone who's leaning in as much as you're leaning in. And people who come with the date me docs and the, you know, 72 bullet criteria, I think it's important to have that privately for sure. It helps you clarify what you're looking for. And I never did that. I wish that I was way more clear about what I wanted, but you just were it. And anyway, I think it's good to have that clarifying insight. When it becomes a public marketing document is when I have a little bit of issues. And I would love people to send me date me docs all day because I do this for a living. But I think when you post it online or you share with everyone else, it sort of disqualifies everyone so quickly. And it also says a lot about who you are when in reality, you might not care as much about that thing. So someone, and then there's some random things in there like beauty. I just want beauty in a woman. And it's like, well, that's, you know, doesn't everyone want beauty? Mm-hmm. So I think it can be somewhat off-putting if you as a potential suitee are looking at that and you're like, oh, I don't match all of those. Women, as we know from jobs, right? I'm bringing in corporate America again, but women will only apply to jobs that they're 100% qualified for, and men apply when they're 60% qualified. So imagine women looking at date me docs being like, nope, 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 that's not really for me. Like, I can't be that perfect woman. It's just so much pressure on the other person. So I do like them for clarification. I don't love them publicly.
To add to that really quickly, I think with that, you also ruin the serendipity, the magic that you're trying to create. If you put up a wall with the date me doc, you've eliminated so many people that could be serendipitously connected to you. And then, like, you run into that stone wall, and then everyone's just trying to climb over that wall to get to you. So it's like, that's what love is all about. It's not like something that you could quantify. I mean, we try to do it through our Google Sheets and through our relationship goals, but like, you have to let the magic unfurl. You have to give it room so that it can do its thing. And so, like, you have to be able to come in, you have to be able to lean in while another person's trying to lean into you to create that connection.
That's fascinating. Zooming out a little bit, what's something we haven't yet discussed that you guys think is important, whether it relates to advice on picking a partner or early dating, or sort of quote unquote, you know, how to run a process, or just making a relationship great? What's something that you guys have learned or think that you'd like to share with our audience?
On the process piece, I think that people need to look at their past patterns and try to do literally the opposite. And we're A/B testing all day, but we're not doing it in our personal lives. So an example would be, if you tend to be in relationships too long, then go on several different dates with people where you're doing 3 dates max and you're running a process, and then you're pausing and saying, which one do I like and want to move forward? If you find yourself cutting off relationships too soon, that happens a lot with my avoidant clients. I always push them, go out on another date. Like, just who cares? It's a drink. It's a hike. It's something. And I know that many people don't have much time, and it feels like you just don't have much time. But for people who really want to be intentional, make the time. You always make the time. It's an excuse that you don't have much time as a single person. Coming from someone with 3 kids, I always wonder, well, what did we do with our time? Yeah. And we were running, obviously working. That's what we did. Instead of kids, what did we do? We worked 80-hour weeks or whatever it was. But take some of those things and deprioritize the swiping of the, or checking of the email, and the and the tweeting and go out on another date. It's okay.
I would say just having those intentional conversations as upfront as possible. So like essentially doing your own kind of self-reflection on like who am I? What do I really truly value? What do I truly value as a person? What do I truly value in a relationship? And have those conversations up front to really understand it. Go on that date and talk about your family life. Talk about your culture. Talk about, you know, just like your upbringing. And like really try to understand, like, does this person get me? You don't even have to have it all in common. That's not the point. The point is just like, am I able to converse with this person and have like a meaningful, enlightened conversation where I can build a connection with this person? And like just like almost like layers of an onion. But instead you're starting at the core. You're not peeling. You're starting at the core to understand like, okay, do we have any sense of overlap here to create a connection? And then from there you start learning more and more and more.
It's a blooming onion.
It's a blooming onion. Outback.
I also think that the biggest thing in relationships is having a growth orientation and having a growth mindset. And so that's what we're trying to teach our kids young at this age about having a growth mindset. If you can grow with someone, then you're good. You can work things out. We have things that we need to grow about ourselves all the time. And the moment one of us stops growing is going to be the demise, right? But I feel like we've just been so good. The other thing that's been really helpful for our marriage, and this is hard to predict, but that our slopes have been very similar. We've kind of been on a trajectory and a path together that really has made sense and made it be sort of easy to be married, I guess.
Yeah,
that's true. And when you plan and prepare and you have all this organization to catch anything that's an issue, but you're also continuing to grow, it's lovely.
It's really lovely. Blooming, I mean.
One other thing that I wanted to just mention is that I think a lot of people are afraid of commitment or afraid of marriage because of what this like institution of marriage means. So for people who are not believers, there's this idea that why would I want to get married and why do I need to do that in the courts? Like I might need to pay more taxes, whatever the case may be. And the way that we got around that is by and people are like, I don't want to spend $1 million and do all these different things. And the way that we got around that is by doing it our own way. And it was really a way that signified the kind of couple we are and the kinds of things that we like to do. And we had a surprise wedding. We're like, we don't care about anyone else and what they want.
Institutional constructs.
Yeah, we're going to do it our way. And so our families came in the night before and we played a game of charades where the clue was we're getting married tomorrow. So they figured it out. They were crying. Not happy tears. Yes. Not all happy tears.
Tears of anger until they turned to tears of joy.
And then we surprised 30 other people the next morning on a shuttle and did it at Cavallo Point and then surprised 150 other people at an open bar. And it really just, I think people are so focused on this idea of the marriage day, of the wedding, of getting married. And it's like, the best is yet to come. And we're about to celebrate 10 years and we're planning a big, better celebration for that. Because like, how amazing is it to celebrate love when you've been doing it 10 years rather than just like, okay, we're officially going to call it, you know, you could do that any day, call it official. So I think, yeah, that was one other thing I wanted to share.
If I could add to that, Eric.
He's like, no, don't add, please.
Good God. I think another thing that people worry about to kind of call things out is, I think like in past generations, like with our parents, we're so used to seeing like the 50% divorce rate. I think everyone kind of has it in the back of their head is like, well, you know that half these marriages don't work out. So, and I saw my parents that they didn't work out. So I don't want that for myself. I'm going to be single for as long as possible out of fear. It's like a fear-based kind of like social mentality around how we view the institution or like the concept of marriage. That's in all of our heads, a lot of people's heads. And I think we're both of the mindset like we play to win. We're not playing scared. Like we're playing for love here. Like, do you want to be lonely and like always be in fear of like I don't want to get divorced, or do you want to like take the leap of faith with someone that you really care about where you have a shared understanding? I think just kind of getting out of your head. Getting out of your head of what society thinks that you should have or who you should be is like a real big roadblock for folks that people need to kind of clear out. And regardless of like the past family trauma that you may have, like this is your life, you're in control of it. You only have one life to live. So you might as well give it all you got versus, you know, being by your lonesome. So
yes,
play to win.
Yes.
Well, to that end, you know, you guys have an amazing marriage. It shows. At the same time, every couple, especially one that's been married, you know, almost 10 years, has its challenges. When you guys think about some of the biggest challenges or conflicts that you've worked through, what's been most helpful? Was it sort of the church or a support system or sort of, you know, therapy or just like, conflict navigation skills you picked up, or kind of how did you get through some of your biggest challenges that you faced over the past decade plus?
It's mostly church. And the other thing about church is it's every Sunday. So there's a reason why you're going, and we're listening to something, and someone's, our amazing pastor's preaching to us. So that's that. We don't really let things fester for too long. I'm not a believer in don't go to bed angry. Sometimes I'm so mad. I'm just going to go to bed, but
it's getting hot in here.
but I do believe in when we both have right minds to come together and talk it through. And he used to always say early on in the relationship, you always want me to talk about my feelings. Well, here I am talking about them. Like, yes, Carl, he's doing it. He's doing the thing. So yeah, we've actually never been to couples therapy. Obviously we're open to it and we don't want to only go when things are bad, but I just feel like we are spiritually aligned and it's been so good to have God in our corner to just be like, I got you.
Yeah. And for non, you know, God believers out there, I think just having a faith-based system of some sort, I don't know what you may call it, but it doesn't matter, but something that keeps you grounded, like spiritually grounded, so that you can rely on it in when times, you know, through thick and thin, regardless of what it is, and someone who kind of shares that with you so that you can have those tough conversations. First, you can look within, and then you can look, you know, outwardly and with your partner. I think that's a really kind of core piece that, I don't know, people probably take into consideration. Maybe more should take, you know, more of it into consideration.
And we've also just learned how to react when I like, we have to practice how we say things to each other. And when it's crazy and stressful and so many things are happening, like we're not going to pick a fight when it's breakfast time and there's literally bagels flying everywhere and kids and all this stuff. We really have to be in the mindset of, okay, now is our time to talk. And so that's what happens in date days. That's what happens in weekly family meetings. That's what happens other times outside of the day-to-day of everything else going on.
There's one other thing before closing that I wanted to get to, which is because you've both been on sort of the talent side and the tech, and now you're, you know, in matchmaking, and Carl, you vicariously. I'm curious, do you see a ton of parallels, or are the parallels overstated between sort of like, you know, thinking about, you know, building an exec recruiting firm versus thinking about building kind of a matchmaking business? Because I've always wondered why there isn't the same level of like rigor or sort of, you know, quality in the matchmaking world, unless I'm missing something, as there is in sort of the recruiting space. And yeah, also like this idea of why it's just so obvious that if I'm going to get a CFO, I would pay, or whatever, you know, an exec, I would pay a recruiting firm. Whereas for the biggest decision,
because you're not trying to sleep with your CFO, Eric.
don't do that, Eric. Don't do that.
But I do think that generally there are so many parallels. It's like when I'm looking for people, top of funnel matters, and you have to look at your funnel metrics in talent. That's what we do, right? We say like, how many people are going to convert down to the next level to be the winner? And you have to have very clear screening questions and know how to ask people really, really great, direct, clear questions and get really good answers. You have to take good notes or have a good note taker. You have to, all of those things matter. And it is a little bit about like having that type of brain where you're always the connector and thinking about everyone. The difference is love often is irrational. And generally, corporate America, business and startups are somewhat rational when it comes to selecting talent. And so I do feel like there's at least a few more constraints in the business world versus in love. There are one recent issue that I just had with a client is amazing first date, amazing second date, third date, amazing until the very end when the pheromones kicked in and the smell was just so bad that she had to cut it off. And that happens. And I feel like in the corporate world, smell is not as big of an issue.
Yeah, no, that's well put. We're over time, but I enjoyed this conversation a lot, guys. Winnie, Carl, thanks so much for coming on Modern Relationships, and maybe we'll do last minute plugs. Winnie, I absolutely love what you're doing. Where can people get more involved or learn more?
First off, I just want to say thank you for being so supportive, Eric. You have just been a great thought partner in everything that I've been doing. If people want to find out more, they can go to whitnie.com. It's spelled W-H-I-T-N-I-E. I got the URL in 1997, knowing that this day would come. And I also post, I'm starting to post on Instagram at Whitney Lowe. So those are ways that people can find me. And the one thing I would say is, yes, if you want to be a client, I'm not cheap, but there are a lot of free options. Some of my events are free. And then also I have something called my romance roster where anyone can join. And that way you're in my database for if I have someone for you and they could potentially be amazing. And that's whitney.com/romance roster. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.